Hey there, cats and kittens. It's Brian from The Commercial Break, the mediocre comedy podcast where my best friend Chrissy and I attempt to make sense of the world. We talk about the absurd, the ridiculous, and the stuff no one asked for, like internet weirdos, pickup artists, and why everyone is obsessed with crystals and colonics. It's all gotta stop. The show is free, it's frequent, and it's probably not for everyone. You can go to tcbpodcast.com, subscribe at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak, or check out the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll see you on the next commercial break, and best to you.
We're back, live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
I think it's a balance. I think this time of year when, you know, today's day one, so I think naturally maybe, you know, there's the feeling of, you know, it's just day one, but, you know, you got to have that urgency from the get-go. And I think Ben's brought that for sure. But, you know, we on the team, you know, we got to bring that every single day. And, you know, we also not only do the coaches are going to be holding us accountable, we got to hold each other accountable with that stuff as well. And so we can do a better job of that. And we got to do a good job of that throughout this training camp in order to get where we want to go.
There's Bears tight end Cole Kmet. Hour two of the Score Evening Show with me, Rami Makhlouf, live from the Hyundai Score Studios and brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. Bears training camp underway. They reported yesterday, first practice today. Joining me now to talk about it after seeing all the action in person and joining me on the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Download the Circus Sports app today. He covers the Bears for the Marquee Sports Network. Also hosts the Chicago Football Show along with Carmen Vitale. It is my pleasure to welcome in Scott Bear. Scott, how are you this afternoon, my man?
I'm doing pretty good. Ben Johnson has the local beat writers on a very early wake-up call. These practices are starting at 8:30. Tomorrow he will talk at 8:10 a.m. Oof. I'm not a morning person. I will become one by the end of August.
And it was hot out there today. I really appreciate you jumping on the phone. That's a long, hot day for Scott Bear and, well, the players too, but for Scott Bear, and I appreciate you coming on the show today.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely wasn't wearing a helmet and shells, so I think I was in better shape, and the PR folks kept feeding me Gatorade. I didn't get palm frond, but I somehow survived.
Good. I'm glad you did, and I'm glad you're here. We heard Cole Kmet there talking about the intensity of Ben Johnson, and we've heard it since he was hired. And Scott, just full disclosure, full transparency, my whole thing on that is I've heard it before, and I'm not saying I don't believe it, but I need it to result in wins. But there is a noticeable difference in the tenor, the mood of practice under Ben Johnson. And on day one of practice today, I understand we got sort of a Ben Johnson outburst with that offense.
Yeah, and I think you're one of a lot of Chicago Bears fans that I've met over the last year and a half or so who are optimistically guarded, right? That look at this. Could this really be it? But last year was supposed to be it, right? And 2018 was really supposed to be the start of a whole new thing. And. So I understand the skepticism that goes with it. And I can only compare it to what Matt Eberflus was last year. But Ben Johnson, look, if you go back to last year, the players kept saying, we need to be coached harder. We needed details. The foundation needs to be set in training camp. Even Ryan Pohl said that there were missed opportunities. There was missed chances to get better execution in the fall. And we're seeing, I thought Cole Kmet said something really interesting today. He said, during this portion of camp, it's not results-based, it's detail-based. You may catch a long pass, deep shot down the sideline, and you feel good about yourself, and the coaches are going to say, that would have been a lot easier for you, and you would have stayed in rhythm had you done X, Y, and Z. And it got to such a point that there was a sequence of team drills in the middle of practice, and the first unit had kind of made some good plays, but they had a tough time lining up. Caleb Williams had to call them back into a huddle once, and then he did it again on the next play, and Ben Johnson had absolutely seen enough. We were not within earshot to understand whether there were expletives involved or not, but he yanked the entire first team off of the field. He put the second team on, and basically the message was, if you can't get it right, if you can't figure it out, presumptive starters, I'm going to pull you and give reps to somebody who can. And I think that that's one of those things where it's kind of a message. Just like if you go back to the offseason program, he kind of lays into Cole Kmet a little bit, kind of saying, mm-hmm. Yeah, here's one of our stars. Those details are expected of those guys too. And I don't think it's sending message. I think it's setting a tone for what to expect over the course of the next 6 weeks.
Did you get, was it just that they were sloppy getting in and out of the huddle? Did you ever get clarification or details on what it was that Ben Johnson was so displeased with?
Yeah, he didn't speak today. He speaks every other day. So yeah, that's, like, those are questions for him. But from what I observed from the sideline is they were having a tough time getting their skill players lined up in the proper formation in the proper spot. And that is rule number one for Ben Johnson. If pre-snap sets up everything else, and if you can't be efficient with that, if you can't be detailed with exactly where you're supposed to be, then you've got nothing. And that's really what they're harping on. And when Caleb, he put his hand in the air kind of signaling, let's start this thing over again, that's when Ben Johnson pulled the ripcord. So we are going to get more details on that, but that's what I saw from the sideline.
Talking with Scott Baer, covers the Bears for the Marquee Sports Network, also hosts the Chicago Football Show. You can find that on YouTube. Just a quick little side note, side question here. So the second team went out there for one play. Who is the quarterback? Who is under center for that one play?
Good question. Something I am trying to take notes on. Case Keenum has been the second unit quarterback pretty consistently dating back to a training camp. And on a squad with very few position battles, quarterback might be one, and that's something to keep an eye on. And I think if you're evaluating it, it's Case Keenum, and I think that's logical because if Caleb gets hurt in the middle of a game, you want a guy with experience who's done it before, who's led big comebacks, who understands the pressure. Nothing against Tyson Bagent, and he'll have a shot at that number two job, but I can understand why Case Keenum is there right now.
Now, on the flip side of things, Dennis Allen was no easier on his guys on the first day of practice out there in 95-degree heat. He had them doing up-downs, burpees today?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, he actually told them ahead of time that he was going to do it, and he showed them tape of other teams doing it. Dennis Allen is a guy that I covered when he was the head coach of the Oakland Raiders, and I know him pretty well, and he's not, just doing this just to do it. We're not going to see Oklahoma drills tomorrow. What he's trying to do early in camp is that he's trying to set the tone, and he's trying to establish, everybody wants to set up game-like scenarios. Well, guess what happens in the fourth quarter with 2 minutes left and Jared Goff and the Lions or Jordan Love and the Packers are on the other side? You're dog tired, man. You're exhausted from playing 50 to 70 snaps of football. And how do you respond when you're mentally and physically exhausted? So when it feels like the index says it's 95 out there and you're getting ready to start a practice where the intensity is going to be high, why don't we ratchet that fatigue level up and see how people respond? It's really easy on the first couple days when you're excited and your uniform is shiny and your helmet is polished to go out there and have a good practice. It's a little harder in the scenario that I played out, a little harder in week 5 or 6. And I think that that's what they're trying to create. I think Dennis Allen called training camp a dark tunnel today, and we've heard how difficult and arduous it's going to be. Now, the one thing I don't want to say is that we get a lot of that gruff stuff from the old Bill Parcells, Marty Schottenheimer coaching tree, right? Tough for tough's sake. That's not what this is. This is a high accountability situation. This is when I put you under a stress test, how do you perform?
Hey, if training camp is a dark tunnel, so the regular season doesn't have to be for Bears fans, I'm all about it. Talking with Scott Baer of the Marquee Sports Network, covers the Bears for them. Now, we hadn't seen throughout all the offseason training camps and OTAs and things, we hadn't seen their top two picks in Colston Loveland or Luther Burden. Let me start with the second round pick before we get to the first round pick. What's the latest on Luther Burden? I understand he's still not out on the practice field.
Yeah, so he wasn't there at all on Wednesday. And I think the question to Ben Johnson didn't come up during his Tuesday press conference because the coaches, and not just Johnson, seemed so confident that he was going to be ready to go to start camp. And social media videos, you can make yourself look fancy there, but he showed himself kind of running and cutting and doing those types of things, which kind of led to the thought process of he's going to be out there. He hasn't really been out there since rookie minicamp. He landed awkwardly on a ball, and at this point you don't have to declare injury, so they just say it's a soft tissue injury. So that was the most surprising thing. Zay Frazier, the fifth-round pick, also wasn't out there.
Oh, Zay, I'm sorry. What was that? Zay Frazier did what?
Yeah, he was not out there either.
Oh, okay.
And that's
okay.
another right. question for Johnson, for sure.
Okay. Now, Colston Loveland, the first round pick, they drafted him and he was injured with the shoulder injury. He was out on the practice field, though, today. How active, how involved was he in the activity that you saw out there?
Not very, and that's expected because these guys need a real ramp-up period to be able to get into the flow of where some of their peers already are. Colston Loveland, going back to June, every time he was in front of a microphone, he seemed like this rehab was totally not a big deal. It was on schedule. He was running routes on air. He was catching passes in walkthroughs and things like that. He felt comfortable with it. Today he was out there fully suited up. Now, there's still no pads, but fully suited up, which was new. He's doing lots of work on the side, though. So I think maybe that they're trying to just make sure that his conditioning is right, that his shoulder is right, and they're going to continue to kind of test that before they really get him back in there. It's called a ramp-up period for a reason, because if you're the Bears, wouldn't you hate it if you were patient all this time and then at the last minute you tried to speed things up and he re-injures his shoulder or he injures hit some soft tissue because he wasn't fully ready. So conservative is the name of the game right now. And right now, because it's July 23rd, if it was August 13th, I'd feel a lot different. But there's no reason to push it now.
Is Braxton Jones on that same sort of ramp-up program or schedule right now?
Yeah, I only saw him ever so briefly. He did some kind of line drills with the first unit, not against a defense. But I didn't see much more of him than that. Now that's it. They have full practices that are open to the media. They have walkthroughs, assuming later in the day because the practice is so early. They could be getting detail work there, but that's all that I saw here. But they seem very confident. The Bears brass does that. Braxton Jones is going to be back in the mix before long. And that's going to be interesting because Ben Johnson said there are blank slates when it comes to that left tackle job. Whether that's true or not, I'm not quite sure. But that is, again, one of the few true position battles we have to follow over the next couple weeks.
Who would you put your money on winning Braxton. That position battle, Scott?
I would go to Circus Sports right now and put it all on Braxton Jones. I just think that—there, shameless plug for you. I would really evaluate it like this. If you went out and invested heavily in three high-priced interior lineman. You have a first-round draft pick at right tackle. The left tackle needs to be secure, and as Ben Johnson puts it, the most important job for a left tackle is pass protection. Go back and look at Braxton Jones' stats. I know not everybody is a fan. He's a pretty darn good pass protector. He's a big dude. He's pretty mobile, and he can keep Caleb Williams upright. And I think that that's the most important job. The experience is going to help, and I think Ozzie Tripillo is a good player, but if he's not ready, great. No reason to rush him. He can play on the right and left. He's a good swing tackle. I just think if you're the Bears and it's Ben Johnson's first season and you want Caleb Williams to take that next step, pass protection and experience in big-time NFL environments is key. That's why you go with Braxton Jones, assuming, if and only if, he returns from this injury playing like he did last year.
Scott Baer of the Marquee Sports Network joining me for just a couple more minutes to talk Bears as they enter training camp this week right here on the Score Evening Show. Want to ask you the question I was asking of our listeners in the first hour of the show, Scott. We heard yesterday Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams lay out some goals, 70% passing, 4,000 yards. What are some goals or benchmarks that you have an eye on or would like to see this Bears team achieve this year that you think would go a long way in producing wins for the Chicago? Just to give you an example, I said fewer sacks, like be in the top half of the league in sacks allowed, and be like a top five defense, like a lot of people were talking about last year or around this time of year. Anything like that you have your eye on that you'd like to see the Bears take a big step forward in this year?
Yeah, I think number one lands on the defensive side of the ball. And yes, top five defense is a good thing. I think that this secondary and the way that Dennis Allen plays his off-the-ball linebackers, they are ready to pick off errant throws. How do you get errant throws? Quarterback pressure. Last year, the Bears had 40 sacks, and it never, ever felt that high, right? This year, they invested in Grady Jarrett. They added Shamar Turner. They added Dio Odengbo. They just got a veteran who worked with Dennis Allen last year. they had 40 sacks. If you want to get into the top 10, you would have had last year, you would have had to go past Seattle at 45. I think if they can get north of 47 and they're in that top five, they can generate more errant throws, more quarterback pressure, and that is going to lead to turnovers. So I look at that individual thing and I say, defensive line, it's on you to really pick things up off the edge, help Montez Sweat, and in the middle. The second one, I think, is red zone offense. They need to be better inside the 20. And I don't want to put a top 10 or whatever, but I want to see them be efficient to the tune of above 55%, maybe more than that, touchdowns. They need to go down there. Caleb Williams talked about this. Points per drive, which is like an advanced sort of stat, right? Points per drive. They need that high. You can't settle for three if you drive 60 yards into the red zone and don't get it through. That's going to be important. They are built for the red zone with Loveland and Komet and Moore and the Dunze. They are built for the red zone. They really are. Now they need to activate and perform well in that area. If you can rush the opposing quarterback and you can score touchdowns when you're down there, I like the Bears' chances.
He is on Twitter and Instagram at ScottBearNFL. You can find his work covering the Bears at MarqueeSportsNetwork.com and check out the Chicago Football Show over on YouTube. Scott Bear, my guest for the last few minutes here on the Score Evening Show. Scott, really appreciate it. Again, long day in the heat. We really, really appreciate you jumping on the phone here for a few minutes.
I mean, talking Bears football is always fun to me. So whenever you need it, I'm around. Thanks, man.
I appreciate that. And he joins me on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. Got a little grody in there at the end. Got a little grody in him. Anytime you want to talk Bears. Bears. You know, last week, Tyler, you were on the board for this. I was filling in for Marshall on Raheemy and Harris. And literally the first time we mentioned the Bears all show, Grody just appears in front of us. Like, and we're out at Wrigley Field. We're doing the game from Gallagher Way. We just the first time we say Bears, and there's Grody, like magic.
One of you guys said, like, if you say Bears three times, Grody just appears.
Yeah, it's like Beetlejuice. You say Bears three times, and Scott Bear has a little bit of that in him. He's got the dog in him when it comes to covering the Chicago Bears, so go and check out his work as well. We'll hit a quick break on the other side. Going to get back to some Cubs talk. Have things changed 1 week, a little over a week ahead of the trade deadline? We'll talk about that right after this. Rami Makhlouf right here on The Score Evening Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670. The Score.
Bears.
Hey, it's Brian Greene from the Commercial Break Comedy Podcast. We've been described as unscripted, unqualified, and unapologetic. And that came from my mother. See if you agree. The Commercial Break is available Tuesday through Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back. Live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
That's me with you until 9 o'clock. We'll talk some Cubs with Sahadev Sharma of The Athletic coming up in the 8 o'clock hour. Open phone lines and text line for you between now and then at 312-644-6767. I'm going to talk some Cubs with you here in just a minute if you want to line up and get online or shoot that text. Speaking of the Cubs, though, tune into Mullion Hall, Raheemy and Harris, and Spiegel and Holmes all this week for your chance to win a pair of tickets to Baseball After Dark at Wildfire and River North on Wednesday, August 6th, featuring special guest Matt Shaw and hosted by Matt Spiegel. Baseball After Dark is presented by Huntington Bank. Life is a masterpiece. Make your money story a bestseller. And by Wildfire. Join Wildfire restaurants as they celebrate 30 years of serving delicious food and creating wonderful memories. I had a momentary panic attack there while I was doing that read because Baseball After Dark is happening right now. Like Spiegs is out there right now at Wildfire doing it. And I was like, oh man, is this a read for something that's already happened? And then I got to the date and it said August 6th. Even right up until I said Wednesday, I was like, oh, is this happening right now? Why am I doing this read? But no, this is another Baseball After Dark on Wednesday, August 6th. If you missed this one, and he'll be joined by Matt Shaw. Speaking of Matt Shaw, plays perfectly into what I want to talk about here with you at 312-644-6767. Have the Cubs' needs or priorities changed here about 8 days? Well, exactly 8 days before Major League Baseball's trade deadline. 312-644-6767. I mentioned, I'm going to talk with Sahadev Sharma, covers the Bears for The Athletic, coming up here in just a little bit in the 8 o'clock hour. And a piece of his at The Athletic, plus just what I've seen here in the last few days since the All-Star break, kind of changed how I'm looking at this Cubs team and what exactly their needs are, or how to prioritize those needs just over a week from the trade deadline. So I and everybody else has been clamoring for starting pitching. And understandably so, every playoff team every year wants to add some starting pitching. And I'm not saying that the Cubs shouldn't or don't need to. So don't twist my words or get it twisted. But I don't know that that's necessarily their greatest need, because if you look at this Cubs rotation, since Imanaga, and this is from Sahadev's piece at The Athletic, since Shota joined the Cubs before last season, he's made 42 starts. They've won 32 of those games. That's ace stuff, man. That's ace stuff. When you're winning that frequently, when a particular pitcher takes the mound, I know he's not like 6'9 and doesn't throw a million miles per hour, but that's ace stuff right there. And with his 7 shutout innings on Saturday, he lowered his ERA to 2.4 on the season, and in his last 2 starts, he's combined for just 1 run allowed in 14 innings. Again, ace type stuff right there. And after Shota, or before Shota, I guess I should say, in the rotation, Matthew Boyd now has 23 straight scoreless innings and 10 straight starts of at least 5 innings and giving up 2 or fewer runs. You hear what I just said? This dude hasn't given up a run in 23 innings, and in 10 straight starts, he's given up 2 or fewer runs and gone at least 5. And his ERA on the season, 2.2, which is 2nd in the National League behind one Paul Skenes at 1.91. And again, I know he doesn't look the part of ace. He doesn't stand as tall as Paul Skenes or have a cool mustache or throw 100 miles an hour. I get it. But both Shota and Matthew Boyd are doing ace-like stuff on the mound this year. And that is a very formidable 1-2 punch right there at the top of the rotation. I'm not going to say as good, as strong, as formidable as anybody going into the postseason, but you'll have a hard time. You'll be hard-pressed to find a team going into the postseason that's got two guys at the top of their rotation doing that type of stuff. A 2.4 ERA and a 2.2 ERA. 23 scoreless innings. One inning allowed in their last 14. All these, you'll have a hard time finding a rotation that has that at the top. And then after that, again, you will find teams in the postseason that are putting worse out there to start games than Cade Horton, or hopefully Jameson Taillon is back sometime soon. Javier Assad is going on a minor league assignment. That's really not a dire situation. Not a situation where you're like, oh man, you gotta have one more starter. You gotta go and get an ace before the playoffs. I heard John Morosi, this was weeks ago, on with Spiegel and Holmes, and he said the goal for the Cubs before the trade deadline should be to get not necessarily an ace, but somebody who can start a playoff game for you. There are plenty of teams that have playoff aspirations that would like to be able to throw a Cade Horton or a Jameson Taillon out there for a game 3 or a game 4. And as far as games 1 and 2 go, again, lots of teams out there would love to throw out a Shota Imanaga or a Matthew Boyd. The Cubs aren't as desperate for starting pitching as I think it's seemed or as we've painted it. And I say we because I've been right there with it. I've been preaching that same message of you got to go get a starter, you got to go get a starter. And again, if they do, great. That's a position where you can never have enough. Never. And you should be looking to upgrade anywhere, anytime. So getting a starting pitcher would be nice. Is it the Cubs' greatest need? I don't know that it is. And I'm starting to think maybe it's not. Have the Cubs' needs or priorities of needs changed as we sit 8 days before the trade deadline? 312-644-6767. Because I'm looking more at a couple other spots, and you probably know what those other spots are. I'll go to third base next, because it's been really tough there for Matt Shaw and just the Cubs in general. The Cubs, and full disclosure, I took this note before today's game, and Matthew Shaw had another home run in today's game. 51 weighted runs created plus from third base this year. Matt Shaw and everybody else included. 51. Worst in baseball. That's the worst in baseball. They're getting as little offensive production from third base as anybody. Less offensive production from third base than anybody else in the major leagues. Now, you do have to say, because this is an ever-changing, evolving type of situation when you're talking about what do you need most before the trade deadline. Matt Shaw heating up a little bit. Had his second home run since the All-Star break today. A lot of the contact he's making since the All-Star break, hard contact, 95 plus exit velocity. And this is kind of what the Cubs have been waiting for with this dude. And again, I was out at Gallagher Way with Layla last week filling in for Marshall, and we talked with Carter Hawkins, the Cubs GM, and he referenced, and I've heard multiple people in the Cubs organization reference, what PCA went through last year, what Miguel Amaya went through last year, where their first 200 bats were rough. They were bad. They were not good. But they sort of got their footing at the major league level, and we started to see what those guys were capable of, and obviously PCA has taken that to yet another level here in 2025. So maybe, just maybe, Matt Shaw is starting to figure it out and starting to swing the bat the Cubs expected him to swing here post All-Star break, and third base is maybe not as great of a need as we might have thought a few weeks ago. Not saying you don't look to improve and address that, but just saying maybe it's not the need that we thought it was. Meanwhile, and you can get in on this, asking you, have the Cubs' needs or priorities changed 8 days before the trade deadline? 312-644-6767. The bullpen is starting to falter a little bit, and it's been so good, man. But bullpens can be so flimsy, and they can look real, real good 1 month or 1 week, and it kind of falls apart quick. It's a volatile position. Relief pitchers and kickers are the most volatile positions in the world of sports. And by that, I mean guys are great and then they're bad, or they're bad and then they're great, and there's really no explanation for it, and they never really find it again. And I'm not saying that is happening with the Cubs, but, and I think Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins know this, when you start to see a bullpen falter, like we've seen the Cubs' bullpen falter here recently, specifically since Sunday, and I know, 4-day sample size, I understand. I do wonder if, like, this is, and especially with some of the guys in that bullpen who are pitching way above the back of the baseball card, I do start to wonder, and we only have 8 days to figure it out, if maybe some of these guys are hitting the wall, are getting figured out, are coming back down to earth, are regressing to the mean, whatever you want to call it. But six runs and 3 home runs Sunday against the Red Sox. Monday, Chris Flexen allowed 5 runs in a loss to the Royals. And then today, Drew Pomeranz, who is part of that meltdown against the Red Sox on Sunday and has been so good, man, and such a great story, he allowed another 2-run homer today. He had allowed, I think, 2 earned runs all season before the little hiccup Sunday and then again today. I think I'm putting Maybe I'm being a little bit panicky here in watching this bullpen. Just bullpens scare me, man. Anytime a bullpen starts to falter, I'm like, uh-oh, is this going to become a thing? And we've seen it. We've seen it with the Cubs. Last year, the bullpen was terrible and then real good from, I think, like May on, or June on, if I have that right. Memory a little blurry on that. And this year could be the opposite. And sometimes there's really no explaining it, or you just point to it and go, well, that was almost bound to happen. That guy was due for that. And some of these guys like Pomeranz, Flexen, man, they've had struggles at the major league level, or in Pomeranz's case, didn't pitch at the major league level for almost 3 years. And you wonder if it's starting to catch up to him. I think bullpen is the greatest need for this Cubs team right now, 8 days away from the trade deadline. Not saying don't address starter, not saying don't address third base or getting another bat off the bench. But have your needs or priorities for this Cubs team changed? As we said, 8 days from the trade deadline, 312-644-6767. Let's go to Frank. He's in North Carolina. Now he's on the score. What's up, Frank?
Hey, I'm a big Brewers fan, but I'm not a Cub hater. Okay. I think the Cubs need to look for pitching. You know, you got Manshaw at third base, and he's been playing. He plays great defense, but he's weak with the stick. But another weak stick in the lineup all of a sudden has been Ian Happ. Happ started out the season great, and what's he doing now? You know, you're in a real quandary, and everybody says, well, you know, you got to go get the guy from Arizona to play third base. He's got a good stick, but isn't he a rental? His contract, I believe, is up at the end of the year, and there you're in the same situation with him as you are with the right fielder, Tucker. So I think pitching is the biggest need.
Bullpen or starter or just all of it?
Probably a little of each. You know, if they could get Hauser from the Sox at a cheap number and then get some help in the bullpen, that might be their best move. But I don't think Alcantara is the guy. I watched him pitch the other night, and he's struggled. He's struggling. And you guys, a lot of money on the hook there. So, but that's the way I look at it. So enjoy your show.
Thanks. I appreciate the call. Thank you. And thank you for not hating the Cubs. It's rare. It's rare you find a Brewers fan who doesn't hate the Cubs. And good insight. Good insight from somebody who's not necessarily a Cubs fan. Seeing a lot of texts on this. I'll keep it going. You want to line up on the phone lines at 312-644-6767. A lot of people disagreeing with me. Okay. I'm open to that. 312-644-6767. Have the needs or priorities of the Cubs changed here in the last week or so since the All-Star break based on what you're watching? It's Rami Makhlouf. It's a Score Evening Show. Much more Bears talk to come on the show this evening, but talking Cubs with you right now on Chicago Sports Radio 670.
Hey, it's Ryan Green from the Commercial Break Comedy Podcast. We've been described as unscripted, unqualified, and unapologetic. And that came from my mother. See if you agree. The Commercial Break is available Tuesday through Friday, wherever you get your podcasts.
The Score.
We're back live with more Rami Makhlouf on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Yeah, I mean, I think we'll be on the phones a ton. We'll try to be as creative as possible. I think there's some years that it's really obvious. You know, the handful of guys you're going to target, the sellers are obvious. I think this year is going to be a year you kind of have to be a little bit more creative.
There's Jed Hoyer on the Marquee Sports Network up in the booth just a couple of games ago. Rami Makhlouf with you on the Score Evening Show until 9 o'clock. Sahadev Sharma will join me at 8:25 to talk some Cubs. Going to talk some Bears with you coming up at 8 o'clock. But talking Cubs with you right now at 312-644-6767, asking if things have changed, if the needs or priorities of this Cubs team have changed here as we approach the trade deadline. I think I'm putting bullpen at the top. And maybe of the three needs, bullpen, third base, and starting pitching, I know it sounds crazy, and again, not saying don't address the other positions. Bullpen is at the top, then it's third base for me, then starting pitching, because Shota and Boyd have probably been better than we have even given them credit for or noticed, and are a formidable 1-2 punch at the top. And your 3 and 4 options, assuming Tyone gets back healthy, not the worst in the world either. I would like to have better, but not the worst in the world. Here's a text from the 630. Things haven't changed for the Cubs since the offseason. Still need a number two starter. Disagree with that. Still need a third baseman. Maybe. And I can't believe we went into the season, second season in a row, relying on a former Astro closer and a rookie in the pen. Nothing has changed. I really don't know how anybody can say that. I had a text earlier. I didn't read it on the air, but somebody said that Craig Counsell has made no discernible difference with this baseball team. I don't know what people are watching. Things are different. Things are different from last year, and things are certainly different from 2 years ago when David Ross was the manager. No knock on Rossi. We all love him. But, yeah, things are different. Now, that doesn't disqualify all the points made in that text. Yeah, they could probably still use a third baseman. Yeah, they don't need a number two starter. But, man, things have changed. This is a much better baseball team than it was. And I wasn't convinced it would be in the offseason based on the way that they spent or didn't. Here's a series of texts from the 317. Don't need an ace but need a playoff starter. Horton, these are a couple of really good points right here. Horton is on an innings count. That is true. Tyone is not reliable. Yeah, kind of true. And Boyd is entering uncharted territory as well. That is true. That's a fact. He's racking up some innings after he pitched, I think, a third of a season last year, coming back from Tommy John surgery. So all good points right there from the 317 as to why maybe they should go and get some starting pitching. Let's go out to the phones, 312-644-6767. Michael is on the road. Now he's on the score. What's up, Michael?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking my call.
My pleasure. What's up?
Hey, I'm a Brewer fan, but my dad's from Schaumburg, so I'm a kind of a closet Chicago fan.
Okay.
I'm curious what you guys think of Craig Counsell. You know, towards the end of his Brewer tenure, I kind of thought he had a slow draw with changing pitchers, right? I watched the game the other night with Brent Brown, and, right, I mean, a couple runs in, we knew Brown didn't have it. What do you think about him having a slow draw with changing pitchers? Thanks for taking my call.
I appreciate you making the call. I'm a big fan of Craig Counsell's. I've covered the guy basically his whole managerial career. I was in Milwaukee when he started that job, and obviously kept following the Cubs as a Cubs fan, and then coming and doing what I do now for the score. I'm a big Craig Counsell guy, and I was thrilled with the move when they made it. Again, no offense to Rossi, but I was thrilled with the move when they made it. I think he might be the best in-game manager in baseball, and that doesn't mean that I'm going to agree with every move he makes. Yeah, maybe quicker trigger with Ben Brown in yesterday's game. It wasn't going well, but also, and I have a text here, Cubs are pitching bullpen games every 5 days for almost a month. Of course they need a starter. It was a bullpen game technically, and you needed Ben Brown to eat up some innings. And I'm not saying you just sacrifice a win. It wasn't yesterday, it was 2 days ago. I'm not saying you just sacrifice a win, but you do have to consider the long game and the big picture in keeping him out there. And also, be nice if Ben Brown figured things out here, man. You know what I mean? That's something that they were kind of really hoping for. He was going to be a pretty big part of that rotation and this team. And so two things at play there, I think. One, eat up some innings. Two, his first game back from the minor leagues. Let's see if he can figure some things out and get straight out there. Text from the 630, you're making this too difficult. I tend to do that. My wife tells me that sometimes. They need a starter and as many bullpen arms as they can get. Wasting any assets on offense is just that, a waste. I don't know altogether that it would be a waste. Maybe what you'd have to give up for Eugenio Suarez, who's the hot name as far as third baseman, that might be a little wasteful, depending on what the package is that you got to give up for that guy. But getting a guy who could play third and first and hit from the right side of the plate, that would be very, very useful for this baseball team, especially if Matt Shaw doesn't figure it out. And what we've seen here in the last, well, since the All-Star break is a bit of a mirage or fool's gold. That would come up big if you could find, again, a guy who can play some third, play some first, hit from the right side. I don't know that it's necessarily wasteful. have a text saying that the Cubs have relied too much on the bullpen. Here it is. From the 6th year, a lot of the bullpen problems are caused by the lack of starting pitching. If you had enough starting pitching, so Ray could go back to be a long reliever. You know, it's funny. I have this note that I just forgot to delete from my notes when I co-hosted with Layla on Friday from Wrigley Field. And it's a note from Friday, so this might have changed a little bit. But the Cubs co-leaders in appearances this year, Brad Keller and Caleb Thielbar, both 40 appearances at that time, Friday. That was 55th among all major league pitchers in that category. So they're not really using, and Palencia, he comes out when it's time to close a game. Their best arms and high leverage arms out of the bullpen, they're not overusing those guys. Now maybe some of the other guys are carrying a big load and it's starting to wear on them and you're starting to see the results of that. But really they haven't gone too hard on this bullpen or the best arms in this bullpen and the guys that are at the back end when you need them to close out games. That's not a lot. 40 appearances for Keller and Thielbar? I don't know that we can point to workload for why this bullpen is faltering right now. I don't want to say breaking down, falling apart. For now, it's just faltering. That's all that it is. One more call before the break and then switch gears to some Bears talk. Ramon is at Midway. Now he's on the score. What's up, Ramon?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good.
Thank you for taking my phone call. I'm thinking that Vince will get a good starting, man. I mean, starting pitchers, at least two. I mean, and maybe one closer. But, yeah, I mean, starting pitching should be like the top first stage that you take.
I get where you're coming from, and if they did it, great. If they got somebody better than Cade Horton or Jameson Taillon, and that's entirely possible, there are plenty of guys out there that are great, and I'm even hoping for it. But if you ask me today, what's the one thing that they need? I think I'm going with some bullpen help. Not a closer. I've heard that talk, that maybe you go and get a closer and bump Palencia down. But some bullpen help would go a long way. I'm a little worried about this bullpen. Anytime I see a bullpen start to falter, I go, I don't know. Is this the beginning of the end? Now, maybe I'm a little too gloom and doom. Calling an audible here, Sadhav Sharma is available to join us next. So we'll keep the Cubs talk going. He covers the Cubs for The Athletic, and he'll join me, Rami Makhlouf, on The Score Evening Show right after this on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hey there, it's Brian Green from the Commercial Break Comedy Podcast. Tune in to our show and join me in making some regrettable decisions. It's available wherever you listen to podcasts.